Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Coca-Cola FEMSA's first quarter 2018 conference call. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded, and all participants are in a listen-only mode. At the request of the company, we will open the conference up for questions and answers after the presentation. During this conference call, management may discuss certain forward-looking statements concerning Coca-Cola FEMSA's future performance and should be considered as good faith estimates made by the company. These forward-looking statements reflect management's expectations and are based upon certain currently available data. Actual results are subject to future events and uncertainties, which can materially impact the company's actual performance. At this time, I will now turn the conference over to Mr. Hector Treviño, Coca-Cola FEMSA's Chief Financial Officer. Please go ahead, Mr. Treviño.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us to discuss our first quarter 2018 results. Let me begin by saying that the comparability of our financial and operating results for the first quarter of 2018 as compared to the same period of 2017 were affected by two main factors. One, as previously announced, due to a change in the reporting method, the results of Coca-Cola FEMSA de Venezuela are no longer included in our consolidated financial statements as of January 1 of 2018. Second, the consolidation of Coca-Cola FEMSA Philippines commencing on February 1st, 2017, including the results for two months in 2017 as compared to a full quarter in 2018. In addition, this consolidation generated a one-time non-cash gain during the first quarter of 2017, benefiting our net income for that period. In order to better describe the performance of our business, for certain information, we present comparable figures excluding the effects of mergers and acquisitions, translation effects resulting from exchange rate movements, and the results of Venezuela in 2017, while including the results of the Philippines as if the consolidation has taken place at the beginning of the first quarter of 2017. Furthermore, as of January 1, 2018, a comprehensive tax reform was implemented in the Philippines that includes, among others, excise taxes on sweetened beverages as follows: 6 Philippine pesos per liter on beverages containing sugar or non-caloric sweeteners, and 12 Philippine pesos per liter on beverages containing high fructose corn syrup. As this excise tax is applied to soft drinks production, it is recognized in cost of goods sold. Compared with Mexico, sugar-related tax is imposed on the sale. To adapt to the implications of this tax reform, we decided to increase prices, resulting in increased revenues that make margins for this operation non-comparable to those of 2017. This will affect the comparability of our Philippines operation results throughout 2018. Having said that, our operations report mixed results in the first quarter of 2018. We leverage our excellent capacity to adapt to different macroeconomic and consumer environments across our markets. In our Mexico and Central America division, we produce low single-digit top-line growth but encounter cost pressures, mainly sugar and concentrate prices, which impacted our operating income. Our South America division reported positive mid-single-digit top-line growth and lower cost and expense efficiencies enabled us to generate operating income growth and margin expansion. In the Philippines, on a comparable basis, we reported a high single-digit volume contraction resulting from the price increase driven by the excise tax, which considerably impacted that operation's profitability. Moving on to our consolidated results for the first quarter, our reported revenues declined 3.2% and our operating income declined 3.4%, partially driven mainly by an unfavorable translation effect as a result of our operational currencies depreciated versus the Mexican peso and with the consolidation of Venezuela as of January 2018. On a comparable basis, our revenues would have grown 7.2%, driven by volume growth in Central America, Colombia, and Brazil, flat volume in Mexico, and prices aligned with or ahead of inflation in Argentina and Mexico. This comparable growth reflects our successful implementation of affordability initiatives, either offering returnable options to our most price-sensitive consumers in Mexico, Brazil, and Colombia, or single-serve entry packs at magic price points in markets such as Argentina, Mexico, Brazil, and the Philippines. Thanks to these initiatives, our transactions increase ahead of our volumes. Our comparable operating income would have declined 1.1%, driven mainly by raw material tailwinds in South America, which were partially offset by cost pressures in Mexico, Central America, and the Philippines. Similarly, our comparable operating cash flow would have grown 4% for the first quarter. Our earnings per share decreased 59% to 1.15 pesos per share. This decrease resulted from our recognition of a one-time non-cash gain of basically 3 billion pesos in the first quarter of 2017 related to the consolidation of our Philippines operation, as we thoroughly explained last year. Now I will briefly discuss the highlights of the quarter for each of our operations. In Mexico, we reported a flat volume compared with low single-digit growth a year ago. As we mentioned on our last call at the end of last year, at the beginning of this year, cold weather continued to affect our volumes. However, over the past 7 weeks of the quarter, this changed, and we delivered positive volumes. On average, our pricing remains ahead of inflation, leading to revenue growth of 5.4% for the quarter. During the quarter, our Mexico operations top-line growth enabled us to partially protect our operating income as we face higher costs and expenses, resulting mainly from higher sugar prices, which increased close to 8% compared to the first quarter of 2017, and higher concentrate prices, and an unfavorable currency hedging position. As we mentioned the last conference call, Mexico has, first half of the year, has a soft comparable basis as compared to last year. In Central America, we reported volume growth of close to 11%, with encouraging performance from our Guatemala operation, thanks to the implementation of our pre-sale platform last year. Pricing in these countries remained challenging because of tough competition in the markets, impacting our top-line results. During the quarter, lower sweetener prices were offset by higher PET costs and the depreciation of the average exchange rate of our local currencies as applied to our U.S. dollar-denominated raw materials. These effects, coupled with the implementation of an additional production line in Nicaragua, reduced our operating income and led to margin contractions. Moving on to South America, in Brazil, we continue our positive volume trend with growth of 2.4% for the quarter. As Bompar was integrated in December 2016, all of our results are fully comparable to last year. For the quarter, we reported a low single-digit top-line decline, due to the effect of negative price mix. Our continuous focus on point-of-sale execution enabled our transactions to grow ahead of volumes. In Brazil, sugar prices continue to remain at lower levels, offsetting an unfavorable raw material hedging position and the depreciation of the Brazilian real as applied to our U.S. dollar-denominated raw material cost. Consequently, our Brazilian operation expanded their operating income and operating cash flow margins, leading the division's profitability. Our Colombian operation achieved 9.4% volume growth for the quarter, compared to a significant volume contraction in the same period last year. Our deployment of returnable PET presentations in price-sensitive regions of the country drove volumes of our premium Coca-Cola brand at affordable prices. Lower sugar prices, a favorable currency hedging position, and the appreciation of the Colombian peso offset higher PET prices for the quarter. Moreover, our continuous cost and expense efficiencies help us to protect our margins. In Argentina, consumers' disposable income was again affected by the government's new program of tariffs. However, our operations revenue were positive for the quarter, with flat volume and prices slightly above inflation. Our gross margin improved year over year, driven by lower sweetener and PET prices, which were partially offset by the depreciation of the Argentine peso as applied to our U.S. dollar-denominated raw materials. Also, our improved selling and administrative expenses, including lower labor costs, enabled us to improve our profitability in Argentina. Finally, in the Philippines, we face a new operating environment resulting from the implementation of a comprehensive tax reform that impacted the beverage industry, as I initially discussed. For the quarter, our operations' comparable volume declined 8%, as we increased our average prices by 25% to adjust our cost structure, given the recognition of this excise tax in cost of goods sold. As part of our strategies to protect this operation profitability, and given the fact that the excise tax is double the size if we use fructose as compared to using sugar, we switch our operations use of relatively lower cost high fructose corn syrup to only cane sugar as our caloric sweetener. Nevertheless, our operating income declined for the quarter, driven by higher PET prices and the devaluation of the Philippine peso as applied to our U.S. dollar-denominated raw materials. As explained at the beginning of this presentation, margins this year in the Philippines are not comparable to previous years, as the excise tax is affecting our cost, and to adapt to this rule, we decided to increase prices, resulting in increased revenues. Now, regarding our financial results, below the operating line, our comprehensive financial results recorded an expense of approximately 2 billion pesos, resulting from a reduction in interest expense as interest rate decline in Brazil, a translation currency effect, and debt reduction in South America. For the first quarter, we recorded a foreign exchange loss as our cash exposure in U.S. dollars was negatively impacted by the appreciation of the Mexican peso. As a reminder, we do not have exposure to currency fluctuation in our dollar-denominated debt, as it is fully swapped to local currencies. As we changed the accounting method for our Venezuela operation, we did not record an impact on the line of monetary position in inflationary subsidiaries. Our net leverage ratio ended the first quarter at 1.65 times, as we reduced our net debt driven mainly by cash flow generation and a favorable translation effect of the depreciation of the Brazilian real as compared to the Mexican peso. During the first quarter, we reported operating income tax as percentage of income before taxes of 32%, compared with 17% last year. However, last year, our lower tax rate was driven mainly by the one-time non-cash gain recorded in connection with the consolidation of our Philippine operations. As we move forward, we are encouraged by the recovery of South America, the resiliency of our Mexican operation, the turnaround of Central America, which started with the reconstruction of our top-line performance, and our strong capabilities to navigate the challenging environment in the Philippines. We are confident that we continue to strengthen our position as a leading global beverage company through our diversified portfolio while hitting new milestones in the transformation of our operating model. Thank you for your continued trust and support. And operator, I would like to open up the call for questions.
To ask a question, that's star 1 on your telephone keypad. And we'll go first to Alvaro Garcia with BTG Pactual.
Hi, Hector, Marilla. Thanks for the call. My question's on pricing in South America, particularly in Brazil and Colombia. How should we think about your expectations regarding the consumer eventually moving to more premium presentations? We heard James Quincy yesterday mention that your markets are starting to get rewards, but still not out of the woods. And we know you've made great inroads, obviously, in your conversations with consumers, with PET presentations, returnable PET presentations. And you obviously have a more effective price pack architecture, but what do you expect from sort of your price mix in the medium term in these markets? And maybe in this light also, commenting on the underperformance of flavors in the quarter. Thank you.
Good morning, Alan. In general, let me talk about South America, and it also applies to Mexico in a way. No? One of the big strategies that we are pushing throughout this year, and we really started probably a year and a half ago, is this issue of affordability. We have to recognize that we operate in 10 countries that have a volatile macroeconomic environment, and that has a very important segment of the population in lower socioeconomic levels. So as we have been commenting over the past few years, we have, on comparable presentations, we have an important price gap versus Pepsi and versus other competitors. And affordability, that's why affordability was an important element of all of our strategic thinking over the last 2 years. No? So what has happened, especially in Brazil and Colombia, as you correctly pointed out, Alvaro, and let me use the example of Colombia for a moment, is as we introduce more and more returnable PET packages with brand Coca-Cola, we are seeing the consumer starting to buy brand Coca-Cola, which is more affordable in that presentation, and switching from our competitors, but also from our single-serve flavor presentations. So one of the strategies that we are deploying in some of these markets is to also have returnable PET presentations for our flavor brands, like Fanta and Sprite. We have them in some of the countries, but not to the same extent that we have brand Coca-Cola. And the reason for that is that the investment that you have to do in bottles and cases, it's an important investment. But throughout the continued dialogue that we have with our partner, the Coca-Cola Company, and the importance that we have convey to the Coca-Cola company about this, this issue, we are moving in the direction of using, I will not say generic bottles, but using a single bottle to be used in different flavors. And therefore we have strategies like in Brazil using three or four different flavors of Fanta in a common bottle and just exchanging a different label. And we are looking at even more aggressive strategies of using common bottles for returnable presentation in large sizes. Brazil has a similar effect. We didn't have a lot of returnables. We are introducing, even for example, in Bombay territories, returnable PET was zero. So we are introducing returnable PET to these new territories, and that has created the fact that the price mix is affected just because of the fact that returnable PET in that presentation is growing in importance in the mix. So in other words, you will not find that we are reducing our prices of individual packages, but rather that the mix, when the economic environment is tough, and when the economic environment is not out of the woods, as you mentioned, the consumer prefers those presentations. And that's a little bit the effect that we have. During this quarter, I think that the highlight is that Mexico and Argentina, we have prices or the price mix, including price increases plus the effect of the mix increasing ahead of inflation. The rest of the countries, we have the opposite effect. We have, mainly because of the mix effect, we have a reduction on the average price per unit case. Again, it's not that we are lowering the price of individual packages, but it's rather more related to the consumer going and looking for a more affordable presentation. In the case of Central America, it's similar to that, but in there we have been holding prices in nominal terms for the last year and a half, basically because we realized that we were priced too high compared to our competitors and too high compared to the macroeconomic environment of these four countries. So in Central America, I'll say it's a little bit the price mix effect and the fact that we are not moving the price points even with some inflation. So we are not increasing prices with inflation in Central America. So that's I think that's more or less the explanation for the prices. Now, what can we expect of the future? For us, obviously, the well-being, and for that I mean higher disposable income of our consumers, will definitely imply a better price possibility for us. And we believe that we are very good at that, and finding these opportunities to increase prices. Now, with all the tools that we have now, as we have tons and tons of information from the shopper and from the stores, and we include that in our advanced analytic platform, one element that we are confident that we could achieve in the future is that we will be much better in identifying these pricing opportunities and especially more efficient in all the promotional activity that we have for the trade. In other words, as I have explained in other forums, this advanced analytic platform will give us the possibility of immediately adjusting our promotional activity because we'll be able to measure the performance of these promotions in the marketplace and will give us the possibility of targeting these promotions to specific areas of a city or even to a specific stores within a city, as opposed to launching a promotional campaign that is across the border on a specific region. So those tools are giving us, and we believe will continue to give us in the future, the possibility of being more efficient in our decision with respect to prices. I hope that we answer your question with this alone.
No, that was a very clear answer. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll go next to Felipe Ucros with Scotiabank.
Yes, good morning, guys. Thanks for the space for questions. My questions are around the Philippines specifically, and all that has happened with the new excise tax. On a comparable basis, it looks like despite a hefty price increase that was, I calculate, a little above the 25% range, maybe around 27, looks like volumes only fell a little more than 8% over the quarter. So that's a lot less than we had expected. But if I recall correctly, there was also a pre-stocking effect on the fourth quarter of last year. So I was wondering if you could give us an idea of what a normalized volume contraction would have been if you didn't have that pre-stocking effect. And I was also wondering what you're expecting for the rest of the year, because I did remember not all the competitors adjusted prices to the same degree. So I imagine that the industry is still going through a process of adjustment, but I'm wondering what you're expecting for the rest of the year. Thank you.
Yes, good morning. The Philippines. Philippines is kind of still a question mark, because this is the fourth month that we are there with this new tax situation. You described precisely what we have been commenting on the past. We increased prices, and very important for everyone to understand, the increase in tax is affecting the cost of goods sold, because it's a tax on the production of the substance, and therefore we have to increase prices to compensate for that additional cost. And that's more or less what the increase in prices just to pass the tax to the consumer. It's around 25%, 25-26%. Having said that, our initial price activity at the beginning of the year, we passed, I'll say, between 90-95% of the tax to the consumer. So we stayed with a lower profitability, and that was basically the effect of rounding the prices to the consumer to a nice round magic price number. In other words, if you are selling a product at 8 pesos, either you move to 8.50 or 9, but you cannot do it to 8.32, just to be an example. So in some cases, you move to 8.30 or 8.20, or you give a little bit more than the tax impact, but the whole average of our pricing equation, we ended up absorbing around between 5 to 10% of the tax. Our competitors, in the analysis we have done, increased the prices, the full effect of the tax, of maybe a little bit more. And for the first time in many months, we are competing with similar prices on the specific packages to our competitors. So we still do not have very clear readings of how the industry is performing and what the market share numbers are, but our hypothesis is that the industry is contracting more than this 7 or 8% that we have contracted in volumes, and that we are gaining a little bit of market share. Our competitors have started to adjust prices a little bit downward, because we feel that they are feeling that pressure. And I have to say that we are a little bit surprised of the volume contraction. We were expecting a higher elasticity and therefore a higher volume contraction. All of this, to explain a little bit that, we need more time to fully understand what is the implication of this new tax structure in the Philippines. Again, this 6 pesos per liter, which translates more or less to 25-26% price increase. It's a 7-8% contraction in volume for our company. One of the negative effects that we have is that since the Philippines is an operation that has a very low margin, as we explained last year, we ended up with around 6% EBIT margin. So this 8% contraction in volume is affecting our profitability. And second, we are not using high fructose, because using high fructose will imply paying a much higher tax, and therefore the whole industry is moving to sugar, and we are starting to see some pressure on the sweetener part, on the sweetener cost of the quest. That's why we have a very bad performance on the operating income. It's a combination of a top line that is declining, and the effect of this additional cost on sweeteners. Granted that the 8%, it looks like a low reduction in volume compared to the price increase, given the fact that we are in a low disposable income country and the expectation for a higher elasticity. Once we start having a little more time to understand market shares and industry performance, we will be able to better understand what the future of this operation is and our expectations. Thank you, Felipe.
Great. That's very clear. If I can do a very small follow-up, I imagine that the answer is you don't know yet, but I wanted to know how the conversations are moving along with Coca-Cola around the Philippines and the put call options, if you could give us any color. And also very shortly, if you could comment on what you're seeing outside of the beverage industry with the consumer. Is it safe to say that the increase in disposable income from the rest of the tax reform is affecting the consumer positively? Thank you.
Yes, with respect to the put and call, it's a good question. We have had several meetings with the Coca-Cola company precisely to comment on what to do with the Philippines given the options we have. We have a very good and an open dialogue. My belief, at least the conversations we have had, is that both the Coca-Cola company and Coca-Cola would like to find a way of staying in the Philippines, because I think that we have proven, especially in the last 2 years, after a rocky start when we arrived with some of the changes with portfolio, route to market, and supply chain, as we have described. But we believe that the last 2 years have shown to the Coca-Cola company and to our board of directors that we are in the right track in terms of understanding the Filipino market. So both companies, I guess the basis for this conversation is that both companies would like to stay together in the Philippines. But we need to face the reality of the economics of the Philippines, and given what I just described about the difficulty of understanding the volume performance, the price of the competitors, our pricing, etc., the reality is that we need more time. So the basis of our conversation is to try to extend the option period for a long enough period so that we could better understand the future of the Philippines without jeopardizing the value of the option for either party. No? And that's where we are. We are probably looking at 2 or 3 years extension of this, but we haven't finalized this conversation with the customer. But again, it's a very open dialogue, and we have basically this year to have this, to discuss it with the Coca-Cola company. With respect to other industries, Felipe, we do not have clear measurements of this, but part of this performance could certainly be related to the full effect of the tax reform, where some of the taxes to the lower socioeconomic levels of the country are being relaxed or reduced. But again, it's too early for us to understand. My feeling is that the whole country is still adapting to this new reality of this package, of this tax package. No? Okay? Thank you, Felipe.
That's super clear. Thank you.
We'll go next to Carlos Laboy with HSBC.
Good morning, Hector and Maria Dila. We understand the COGS pressure in Mexico with the sugar and the concentrate pricing, but can you please expand on the operating expense pressures and how you're thinking in terms of countering all of these cost pressures?
Good morning, Carlos. We have some increases in the SG&A, basically related, and there are some factors, some are minor, some are a little bit larger, but none of those are large. One, which is very clear, we closed down in Mexico one warehouse. It was in the press because of security reasons. This is the second one we have closed in the state of Guerrero, in the area of Guerrero, Michoacán. This time is in Guerrero. It's a small operation, but a small warehouse that was under a lot of pressure from the criminal side, from the cartels, basically trying to for this warehouse to pay a security fee, and we decided for the protection of our employees just to close out the facility, and that area will be served by independent wholesalers. So we have, we basically, because we cannot relocate the employees to other areas because of geographic and distant regions, we basically terminated the work relationship with a lot of people. It's a small one-time charge, but it's there in the Mexico operation. More importantly, Carlos, to your question, it has to do with also some one-time activity or fees that are being paid to consultants related basically to the development of the commercial platform that we described. As you know, we have McKinsey as an advisor in some of these advanced analytics metrics, and everything that has to do with supply chain, especially logistics. We are using software and consultants called GDA that is helping us to much better perform in terms of logistics and maintenance for our plants, etc. So we have those extra costs embedded in the SG&A. There are some part of that is one time, part of that is more permanent because we have some software that are being deployed and will have some depreciation effect in our SG&A. But conceptually, all of these investments have a payback that will be reflected either in a better top line or better production cost. Okay? So I'm not that worried about that. I know that the number looks a little bit out of whack, but I think that is basically related to this one time fees that are being paid, and in general, the savings we'll get on the better revenues or better costs that we'll have on the top of the P&L will more than compensate some of these expenses as we have these centers of excellence in the corporate headquarters. Okay?
Thank you, Hector.
Thank you, Carlos.
We'll go next to Ulysses Argote with J.P. Morgan.
Hey, Hector Maridila, thanks so much for the call. Just one quick question. For Mexico in particular, can you please give us more color on what you're seeing in terms of competitive dynamics and also if you're seeing any relevant change in product mix here in Mexico? Thank you.
Good morning, Ulysses. In Mexico, speaking about CSDs, there are not that many changes in the competitive dynamics. Our competitors have also increased prices, and we are speaking basically about Jarritos with Red Cola and Pepsi, especially in the Valley of Mexico. We are seeing, however, a big swing in the mix of products, basically for 2 liters and 3 liters returnable PET, and a decline in the 600 milliliter brand Coca-Cola. That's a trend that we have been seeing for several months, and that has to do again with the, probably with the first question that we received that has to do with prices. As the consumer is going through a difficult macroeconomic environment, the consumer is preferring to move to these big presentations. The other important fact is that the 600 milliliters, which is equivalent in size to the big 20 or the 20 ounce that we have in the U.S., what we have is that for many months, years, the 600 milliliters was being sold at 10 pesos, which is a very important magic price in Mexico. And right now we are selling that at 12 pesos. So it's a little bit, it's out of line in terms of the magic price. And as a way to compensate for that, we are starting to deploy a 500 milliliter bottle at 10 pesos. Again, to regain the magic price point, and trying to regain growth in single serve presentations. So in Mexico, competitive dynamics, not that much to talk in terms of the of CSDs, and everyone is more or less increasing prices, similar to us. And however, we are seeing this mix change that is reducing our average price per unit case, but because the price increases we have during the year, still the formula is positive for Mexico. On the water segment, we are seeing more dynamic with respect to discounting and promotional activity with the stores. So as normal, water is a category that is promoted a lot. And with non-carbonated drinks, we are seeing some important advances from our brands. We are now working with others in Mexico with good results. Monster is doing fine, is growing. So non-carbonated drinks, although very small in size still for the whole mix, are growing faster, certainly faster than CSDs. And in there, I think that we have the portfolio and the brands to continue doing some inroads with our competitors. Okay? Thank you, Liz.
Thank you very much, Hector.
We'll go next to Benjamin Thur with Barclays.
Hey, good morning, Hector. Just a quick follow-up on that, actually, just to understand a little bit the magnitude of the press release you put out about a month ago in regards to the closure in the state of Guerrero and Ciudad Altamirano. So clearly it's going to have some implications in terms of cost and getting into that area. But the general issue of security and you being forced to close down a plant, is that something you have similar issues in other areas, which is to a certain degree affecting partially what we have on the transaction performance, or is that really more of a macroeconomic issue, why transactions continue to be somewhat flattish and actually not growing? So that would be great if you could shed some color on that, and if you have a little bit of if you could share a timeline, what you expect to potentially go back into the region if things were to improve or not, or if this is something that's going to be more of a permanent nature. Thank you.
Good morning, Ben. Ciudad Altamirano is a distribution center, it's a warehouse that we have there. It sells around 500,000 unit cases a month. The closing of that operation is more permanent in nature, given the fact of until we get better control. The state of Guerrero and the Michoacán area are pretty much affected by security and extortion issues. extortion issues, and in this case, these guys were asking basically for the company to pay a security ransom so that they would not mess around with our workers. Obviously, for us, it's impossible to start to be negotiating things like that. At some point in time, the security of our workers was in jeopardy. A couple of them were injured as they were putting more and more pressure for us to start paying, you know, this ransom. And our expectation then is that similar to Arcelia, which was a warehouse that was closed in the state of Michoacán a year ago, we will start using wholesalers to cover that area. Wholesalers will take many other products together with our products. So I'm not expecting a volume decline because of this, because somehow the consumer will finally, at the end of the day, will get our products. But it's a sad story that the region is under that circumstances where the security cannot be guaranteed. With respect to transactions, the fact that transactions are not growing has to do with what I described in the last question. You see a trend where the mix of large presentations are increasing at the expense of the single-serve presentations. That combination that I mentioned about 2 liters and 3 liters growing in importance versus 600 milliliters declining, it's what is creating this effect that transactions are not growing at the same pace than volume. And I think that's basically what I can say about Ciudad Altamirano, and it again is a more permanent decision. We have a one-time payment to terminate the work relationship with this workers in the area that is reflected in the quarter, and then this mix change towards larger sizes, but that makes changes in the whole country, not only in that area. Okay, more or less we have, so you have an idea, around 160 employees in that area that were terminated. Yep. Yeah? Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks.
We'll go next to Lauren Torres with UBS.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Hector, I'm encouraged to hear about your view on the Philippines and staying there. I don't know if you explicitly said this, but is there a discussion, though, with respect to extending that contract, meaning being partners with Cook beyond the existing put call option? and also just to get your longer-term view on Asia. I know the Philippines was kind of a first entry into this market with ideas to kind of expand further. I don't know if this instance kind of taints you a bit, or you're still quite encouraged about future expansion in Southeast Asia. So curious to get your perspective on that. Thanks.
Good morning, Lori. Yes, I think that right now, just for everyone to be very clear, we own 51%. We have an option to buy the remaining 49% with a formula, and with a formula that is basically the same price we pay plus a carrying cost. And we have a put option during all this year to exit the Philippine market and us getting the same dollars we paid 5 years ago, which is around $680 million. So what are the circumstances here? The hypothesis is that with this tax, and until we fully understand the impact of this tax, it's very difficult for us to decide either on the put on the call. But we owe to our shareholders, and it's our fiduciary duty to do a thorough analysis of what is the future value of the Philippines given these new circumstances. It looks like exercising the call is going to be difficult, given that the price continues to grow with a simple rate of 3.75% every year. So if we started when we acquired the Philippines, as a reminder, the enterprise value was $1.35 billion. So 49% of that plus the interest rate will take you to 1.6 or 1.7, depending on the extension of this call, the potential extension. So it looks like it might be out of the money. And the most difficult part is, what is the value of our 51%? And if it's, and the reality and the judgment call that we need to do is it substantially below the value that we pay, which is the $1.35 billion times 51%? If it's substantially below, does it merit for us to exit the Philippine market? Understanding that if we exit the Philippine market, for us, it will imply that we will not be present in Southeast Asia. It will not make any sense for us to acquire other smaller territories that are available around this area if we are not in the Philippines. And that's more or less the dialogue that we have with the Coca-Cola companies. As I said, the two of us would like to stay. And when I say together, meaning the Coca-Cola company is going to be there, no question about it. I mean, the Coca-Cola company is going to be in the Philippines. The question is, if the partner is going to be Coca-Cola or someone else. I believe personally, and the dialogue that I have had with the Coca-Cola company is that, as I mentioned, because of the performance we have had, is the best performance the Philippines have had for the system in the last 15 years. As I said, clearly the first 2 years were difficult as we were adjusting, but now we have three very good years that we could continue to grow. And you saw how the profitability was growing versus what we were expecting, and et cetera. The short answer here, Laurie, is we need to wait a little bit more. We have the full 2018 before deciding on this put option. The call, we have 2 years. And that's the analysis we have to perform internally and together with the Coca-Cola company with respect to changes in the term of these options. No? I think that potential alternatives is that, you know, the different alternatives is either we exit the Philippines, either we stay with 51% and try to negotiate with the Coca-Cola company what is the future of the Philippines and the future of the other 49% and the future of our territories, or we exercise the call and we have 100% of the Philippines and the potential to continue growing in other territories. I think those are the three ways that we have in front of us, and that we it's a difficult analysis, but we have to do it, no? Okay.
And your thoughts? Your thoughts on further investment or expansion in Southeast Asia? I mean, you still feel comfortable about thinking about your options there as well?
Yes, because I think that in general, what we have learned is there is a lot of discussion about sugar and drinks around the world, about sugar around the world. And you see positive news and negative news, and we kind of are the bad boys of obesity around the world. We have attacks in Mexico and the Philippines, and we have threats of taxes in other places that have been disarmed or have not been passed into law. For example, in Colombia, there was a lot of discussion in Colombia last year if the industry should be taxed or not. But again, it looks like that there is this part of fighting obesity, and then there is this part of collecting taxes. And it looks like, in the case of the Philippines, is the latter, because either zero-calorie drinks are being taxed. It's a way of collecting taxes, similar to collecting taxes on beer or tobacco or gasoline or whatever other is. It's easy to tax because the number of participants is small. Now, the question is, if we are confronted to a tax environment in one of these countries in Southeast Asia, are we going to have a history similar to Mexico where you have certainly cuts, but then you start to recover because you have the brand preference, you adjust a little bit the sizes of your presentations, you adjust the portfolio, you start working on the formulation. It's incredible the job that what the industry has done, the industry and especially the Coca-Cola industry, Coca-Cola system has done in terms of offering choices to the consumer with full sugar, mid-cal, or zero-cal products. And similar to what I said about affordability, reformulation is a very big element of our strategy going forward because we recognize this potential risk. So because of the experience we have in the Philippines, and coming back to your question, because of the experience we have in the Philippines, What we believe is the better understanding that we have now after being 5 years there of the marketplace, the better of an understanding on how to serve the very small stores that is even helping us to better serve the small stores in Latin America, what we have learned in the Philippines. We believe that we have the capacity to go to other Southeast Asia countries. We feel there right now. And our appetite for that is there. The difficult issue here is the new tax in the Philippines putting some additional analysis that we have to perform, again, as a fiduciary duty to our shareholders, of analyzing the value of these options. And certainly, if the decision at some point in time is to exit the Philippines, then the rest of Southeast Asia probably will not make sense. And in the Philippines, last year sold 600 million cases. You are Vietnam, Cambodia, Singapore, Malaysia, you will have 100 million unit cases on those four countries. So the Philippines is a big market within Southeast Asia. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Leah.
We'll go next to Antonio Gonzalez with Credit Suisse.
Hello, Hector and Maria Dila. Thank you for taking my question. Just two quick ones. Again, sorry to come back to the Philippines, but if I see the decline in volumes, as you've explained, it's perhaps not as bad as we would have expected at the beginning of the year. But even more so, when I look at transactions, you barely have a decline. And it seems like, particularly in the non-carbonate portfolio, transactions even went up. So I just wanted to see if you can add some color on and perspective on why you think this is the case. That's my first question. And then secondly, if I may, just very quickly, when I look at the growth in Brazil, again, transactions or volumes, it looks like basically 100% of the growth, particularly looking at transactions, is driven by the non-carbonated portfolio. So I wanted to ask if you think this is a more structural change, if there's any cyclical or seasonal explaining this positive performance of non-carbonated drinks in Brazil, or perhaps the introduction of Monster or any other element that we should be considering there. Thank you, Hector.
Yes, so, let me start with the Philippines. In the Philippines, one of the elements that is growing very fast and in a profitable manner is the water category. We have very important brand that is used or that has this halo of being good for baby formulas, which is this Wilkins Pure brand, that has very good brand appeal. And we have been deploying, prior to the tax, this push for water in single-serve presentations. And that's why you are seeing this movement and transactions, and that's one of the explanations there. Affordability also play a good role even prior to the tax, and we launched small sizes in Coca-Cola. If I remember correctly, one is called Mismo and the other one is Facto. One of them is in a returnable glass bottle that is also getting a lot of traction. So the Philippine issue is explained basically because of that. In the case of Brazil, we had good performance with Monster, good performance with juices and teas. And that has to do basically with a reconfiguration of the whole non-carbonated strategy in Brazil. I think that we have not discussed this on these conferences, but in the past, everything was centralized, similar to what we have in Cuba and in Mexico. Remember that Brazil is the merger of Leao plus Cuba del Valle plus Sucos Mais. And everything that has to do with accountability and distribution costs was not very clear. So we ended up splitting the country in different regions, and therefore the profitability for some of these packages for the bottler started to improve because you ended up paying a more reasonable transportation cost. Just imagine the size of Brazil and having one production plant and having the same transportation cost to every corner of Brazil. That does not work very well for the profitability of certain areas that were subsidizing the farther away areas of the country, but Brazil is very big. So as we decentralize Brazil, my hypothesis here is that the focus of the operators was increased because now they have a profitable formula to push for this product. So that's one of the reasons why non-carbonary drinks in Brazil is increasing. Certainly, Monster is doing well, but the rest of the steel portfolio is also growing at a national pace. We also have, in every country, and I want to be very clear on this, and I think it's important, in every country we have this year the inclusion of ADES, which we didn't have last year, and it's helping in that category. In Argentina, we have a centralized JV that is doing all the sale of the product, and we only collect a margin for the distribution. But that's the agreement we have with the rest of the bottlers in Argentina. So in Argentina, we are not adding added volume to our non-carbonated drinks. It's the only exception we have to do. It has to do with a lot of planning of what was better for the system. So the sale is done by a JV where we participate with certain percentage, and we only have a distribution margin, and that distribution margin is what is affecting our revenue. But we are not adding the cases in the case of Argentina. I hope that this explains a little bit better.
This is super helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll go next to Lucia Chapiccia with Goldman Sachs.
Hi, Hector. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my question. Most of my questions have been answered, but as I have the chance, maybe a more general one on Brazil and tying back a little bit to the consolidation discussion. I guess my question relates to the idea of, as we look forward, as the market continues to slowly but, directionally looking better, how a more consolidated market structure more broadly do you think would benefit or should be auspicable to implement the strategy? What I'm trying to say is the current structure been somehow a liability, if you look at the Brazilian market overall, as we went through the recession and now as we're coming out, is there potentially still an appeal in driving more consolidation into that market, or as you look at your regional franchise, is large enough, scaled enough, consistent enough, whereby at the end of the day, a broader consolidation of Brazil as a country overall wouldn't make that much of a difference, as hopefully, you'll find a way to leverage the recovery if that continues.
Good morning, Luca. Yes, I think that at the end of the day, my feeling is that consolidation will continue to happen in Brazil. The timing of this is difficult to understand, to predict. I think that you have very clear examples, and let me use Bompar as an example. Bompar, because of the smaller scale of Bompar, it was difficult for them to have returnable PET presentations. And pricing for Bompar was totally different and lower than the rest of the system, because they couldn't compete appropriately. But doing an investment in returnable PET was difficult for them because of the scale. I think that exemplifies very well why consolidation, the opportunity for consolidation is there and it's important in the future. I agree with you. My feeling is that all the participants there are watching how the recovery is happening. You might find some people saying, well, let's wait a little more. Others will say, let's start to move out, because whatever, they don't have the same views on the macroeconomic recovery or whatever. And sooner or later, I think that consolidation will continue to happen. You have three large bottlers, Solar and Dina and ourselves, and if I remember correctly, there are like six or seven more independent bottlers that are small in size and that do not have the scale to do a lot of the investments that are required to really take advantage of the opportunities in the marketplace. Okay?
Understood. And so you think that the last 4 or 5 years have reinforced the case for consolidation, meaning is the fragmentation of the country been a factor maybe in the fact that soft drinks have lagged maybe some other categories, or the recovery has been maybe less consistent as it comes in? One could argue that this more recent experience has made the case even stronger. Is that fair?
I think that there were some changes, structural changes in the industry in the past, especially with taxes, expected taxes on raw materials and all, everything that has to do with transportation and delivery and freight of in our industry, that 4 or 5 years ago, or yes, around 4 years ago, basically decreased our margins by 300 basis points, that we are slowly recovering. And I'm not sure that 100% of the effects have to do with the fragmentation, but certainly that doesn't bode well for having a better profit or better recovery. But there are other things happening around, in addition to fragmentation, that created a specific pressure on our industry, not on the margins.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll go next to Alex Roberts with Citi.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for taking the question. Yeah, I mean, I guess most of mine were also answered, but perhaps just the first one on the Philippines and the second on Brazil. I mean, definitely appreciate the operating deleverage effect, right, of having to pass on this sugar tax. And I think that you've helped us understand the volume hit. But, looking at the profitability, I mean, in the Philippines here in the first quarter, I guess the 700 basis points contraction in that business's margin to a single-digit or high single-digit margin when you've kind of been doing all last year, you know, mid-teens. I mean, are we kind of how should we think about the recovery? And I guess when I think about 2014 in Mexico, we had, you know, high per caps structurally in Mexico. There was not as high of a magnitude of tax increase, and it was about a year and a half to get back to the pre-tax levels in terms of volume. Are we looking at perhaps a couple years to get back to pre-tax volume levels in the Philippines? And you talk about it now as a new operating environment. Is it fair to assume that getting back to double-digit margins in this business in the Philippines is perhaps a medium-term goal, or do you think it structurally it is possible to get back to the profitability levels that you had last year?
Good morning, Alex. The issue with profitability in the Philippines, let me comment on several fronts. First, the reduction on this margin, there are two main effects, but one is very large. Remember that we are increasing our revenue line by around 25% with the same absolute number of, just because of that effect, with the same absolute number of EBIT or EBITDA. So by definition, the margin is coming back significantly. So more than half of the contraction has to do with the fact that the revenues have increased, but the profits stay more or less at the same level. Different than Mexico, that you pass the tax to the consumer and you refer everything to a net price, which is net of this tax. In the case of the Philippines, the taxes are the production, so it's part of our cost of goods sold, and we have to increase the price. The other element has to do with the low margin that the Philippines had at the beginning. I mean, we have a 5-6% EBIT margin. Granted that because of all the investments we have done in the past, and the fact that you have returnable glass is a very important element of our assets in the Philippines, you have a high depreciation. Every year we have been investing around $100 million in CapEx, and half of that has to do with bottles and cases that have a three-year life. So you have basically around $50 million depreciation effect just because of the of bottles and cases. So when you have a low margin and you have a contraction on the volume, even if it's smaller than we were anticipating, but it's an 8% contraction, you immediately start losing the most profitable, you are close to your break even, and therefore you are very sensitive to these margins. It's difficult to predict, Alex, and that's why in the dialogue that we have with the Coca-Cola company, what we are trying to achieve is to have a little bit more time so that both the Coca-Cola company and Coke FEMSA can better understand the effect of this tax on the Philippine market. But it's difficult to predict what the recovery pace of the volumes and therefore somehow these golden cases that will positively impact the profitability when will that happen. If it's something similar to Mexico, then probably a year from now we will see much better volumes. It's because of the lower disposable income of the Filipino consumer and the size of the tax, which is substantially larger than Mexico. If it will take longer, then it will have a different effect than Mexico. And that's precisely why we are trying to buy some time with these options that we have in the Philippines with the Coca-Cola company to have a better grasp, a better understanding of the how the Filipino market will evolve within the tax situation. Okay?
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. I can appreciate that. The second one is on Brazil, and it relates to your partner, Heineken, and the beer business. I mean, a year ago, right, we got the letter, the letter was sent about, intentions to terminate earlier than expected the distribution contract. I'm wondering how are things going with those discussions, and do you think it's possible or a real likelihood that if in fact this contract is terminated, let's say by year end, you would seek an alternative partner, or would you go out of the loan, to the extent that you could kind of comment on that now that we're kind of getting into this period of year two, right, with this issue, and just looking at the Heineken volumes in the first quarter in Brazil, I mean it seemed that they were pretty good, double digit. I wonder if and there's two pieces of their portfolio. Obviously, how was beer for you in the first quarter? If you could comment on that, and do you think that there's a recovery going on in the beer industry in terms of volume, in your view? Thanks very much.
Yes, Alex. Let me comment on this Heineken issue, and obviously, as I expressed in the past, we have an obligation to keep confidentiality in all this process, so there's very little that I can discuss. The facts are we have an agreement that has a date that ends in 2022. Heineken thinks that they can terminate the agreement with a six-month notice, and we are currently on an arbitration process, which is the process that is embedded in the contract to resolve differences. We continue to serve Heineken so far, and we need to wait for the arbitration panel to conclude on this, and depending on that, we will land. With respect to the first quarter performance, Heineken is doing well. We have around 20% growth in the volume of Heineken, and it's having a good performance. There were some price adjustments, and that's why revenues were not as high. But volume-wise, Heineken and Amstel are doing, and the Heineken portfolio is doing very well. one of the issues is that there is a lot of, I guess, bad publicity for Amber in their beer portfolio with respect to the fact that, I don't know if it's a fact, but with respect to this comment that Amber does not use 100% malt in their formulas and that they use some corn and some other grapes. And there is a negative consumer trend there, apparently. I have not seen real market share numbers, but again, the Heineken portfolio is going double digits. Yeah? Okay?
Sorry. That's organic then. It's organic growth is 20% in the quarter. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay.
With lower prices. With some price adjustments that kind of can be in the market. Yes.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
This concludes the question and answer session. I'll turn the call back to management for closing remarks.
Thank you for your interest in Coca-Cola FEMSA. As always, our team is available to answer any of your remaining questions. Thank you so much.
This does conclude today's conference. We thank you for your participation.